Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Stros Bros Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Perez. Joining me, as always, is Lee Wyatt, and today we've got a special guest. We've got Jared Webb join us today. We're going to talk about the recent injuries to Bud Norris and Jose Altuve. We're going to talk about the draft. We're going to talk about prospects and the surprising move by George Pristolos, the president and CEO of the Houston Astros, stepping down today. All that and more right after this.
There it is! The Astros have won the Central Division title.
It's on! It's on! It's on!
Line drive right center field. That's number 3,000.
One away to say goodbye.
And now you're listening to the Astros.
All right, guys, we are here. So, Jared Webb, welcome to the podcast, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Richard.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, guys. So, the news about Pristolos, what do you guys think about that?
Ooh, you know, I was a little surprised by it. Actually, I was a lot surprised by it. It just, you know, I was expecting him probably to get fired at some point in time, like maybe after the season. But it just, like, he resigned just really at the beginning of the year. There's still a lot of games left to be played. Pretty surprising move, but it's not really a bad move either.
Well, when you look at the Pristolos deal, when him and Crane came in together, they kind of seemed like they had an idea of what they were going in as, but as you read the announcements and listen to what's going on, apparently this is what Pristolos does for a living. He helps these organizations go in and put together a pitch for these teams and helps them get established. So this might have been the plan from the beginning. They might actually have people in mind to step in and take this spot. Granted, this is probably a good time for Pristolos to go, considering some of the things that he instilled has put him at odds with some of the fans. So this might be good.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys there. And I honestly had no idea that George Pristolos would have been a temporary sort of filler. Seeing the way he, I don't remember him speaking to the crowd at the launch party, but I remember that video they showed of him talking, and, I felt pretty confident in what the plan he had, and I was really, I guess I bought into what he was selling, and I was just a little bit surprised today. This really came out of the blue. I don't know about you guys, but I had no, this is nothing, you know, this came completely out of the blue, and I heard it from Lee off the air that Craig Biggio there's a group of guys, and Craig Biggio is one of the guys named to be on the to be the replacement for Pristolos, and I don't know how I feel about Biggio being there, but I do like him being a part of the organization as a special assistant to the GM, but I'm not 100% sure about having him as the president.
Well, I mean, that's the weird thing. When you think of a CEO, you think of a guy who's running every aspect of the game. If Biggio were to step in as maybe the, you know, director of baseball operations or something like that, then maybe, yeah. But stepping in as the CEO, that's a bit rough. Even Nolan Ryan is the CEO of the Rangers. That's kind of one of those things where you're going, well, there's probably a bunch of businessmen and people like that standing behind him going, yeah, here's what we need you to present to the fans.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be it's a lot more suit than it would be, you know, rather than on field. It seems like the polar opposite of what Biggio would be more inclined to doing. Because I'd see Biggio as more of a hands-on rather than being, you know, in a suit.
If they're going to have somebody like a former Astro step in and do it, Zachary Levine brought this up. He said he would wait for Bertman to get out of the game and then use him as the former Astro, if they're gonna go that route. But like you guys said, Biggio, I just don't think he would make the best CEO. I mean, he was a great baseball player. Should have been first ballot Hall of Fame, if you ask me. But handling the entire scheme of things, I don't know if I could see Biggio doing that.
Yeah, neither did I. And as soon as that the Pristolos news, you know, kind of spread around and simmered, I heard a lot of people, you know, just talking about really out of nonsense about the about Nolan Ryan possibly coming back to Houston, and I tuned into the Nolan Ryan show, I guess you could call it. Nolan Ryan said he really sounded conflicted. He didn't really give a straight yes or no, and it sounded as if he wasn't fully ready to say yes or no on the decision. He did say he hasn't received a call from Jim Crane or anybody, but he says he hasn't given anything hinting to whether he would or not, but he just says, I don't know, and I think they will find the right person to fill the position.
Well, I mean, obviously with this one, the main thing is, while Ryan would be great for the position, I'm sure custom jerseys for Nolan Ryan would, their sales would increase for the Astros team store. The big thing is making sure that whoever we bring on board is on board with what Luno and Crane have envisioned, you know, the prospect movement, the youth movement. So as long as we get someone who's in with that and understands the statistical side of what we're doing, I think we'll be all right.
I was just going to say that I don't really see whoever they bring in. I don't see them going against what Jim Crane and Jeff Luno are doing. I don't think either one of those guys would allow it. More specifically, Jim Crane. Like, there were some mentions that, you know, whoever we bring in, I hope that they don't get rid of Jeff Luno. Well, number one, I don't think Jim Crane would allow them to do that.
Yeah, you know, I think I totally agree, and I think there's a system to it. Because Jeff Luno, he's got his own thing right now. It's kind of like a system in place. I think Jim Crane will definitely consult Luno before making any sort of decision, because I think it's a collaborative effort to bring this guy in, and they have to bring in somebody who they can agree on that shares our same vision in for the Astros organization. So I don't think we have to worry about, you know, either one of them or Luno getting canned. But I think it will be a decision that both Crane and Luna will have to make together. And as far as this goes, the Postolos thing, I think it really helped out Crane to buy the Astros. So I think he's done his job, and I think his time is done here in Houston. As Jared said earlier, I don't think he was supposed to be anything permanent. So I think he just did his job, and he's, you know, done for now.
Yeah, and another thing that could have, you know, I think Jared mentioned this as well, some of the things that he's doing right now, you know, that's really upsetting to people. One of those things is getting CS in Houston a deal with the major providers. That could have had an impact on this, and I think that's been brought up before. So, really, it's just the whole timing of it is surprising, but the move itself really isn't surprising. And CS in Houston actually could have played a big role in this, not like the company itself, but the deals not being done could have actually played a pretty big role in the situation.
You know, I saw that earlier, and I think this may have been back in January, February, when I heard about this initially, about Postolos being the sort of hurdle to get the deal done. And now that it's come up again, and I think this may have been one of the bigger factors in having him leave. I'm not too sure if this is on his own terms or, you know, he was kind of pushed out, but I don't think we'll ever know that. But I'm kind of glad. I'm a little bit more hopeful now that we'll be able to get a deal done for the television in CSN Houston, because really, it seems like they've got a lot of good going on, and the times I have been able to watch it, you know, at a friend's house or something, I do enjoy what they've got, and I do want to see that. So I hope that with Postolos' absence or his exit, that we can get CSN done.
Well, and not to take us to off topic, but, I mean, yeah, he could have been the guy who was holding that deal up. But the thing is that deal is going to be – that's going to be our major financial provider for the foreseeable future. I mean, I think it's – ESPN pays every single team somewhere from 15 to 20 million a year for being able to air the games. That's a lot of money that could go to free. So, you know, whoever comes in is probably going to make sure that they don't just, you know, walk in and say, well, whatever DirecTV wants, we'll give it to them. There's still going to be a negotiating process, and there's still going to be a turnover period.
Right. And I don't think we're just going to lay down flat, but I think that we'll give them a decent, it'll be a decent price point and nothing absurd that they said before.
Well, I mean, I believe when the Dodgers sold their team, their deal was already in place. Unfortunately, ours wasn't. And from what I'm understanding, this TV deal was actually Postolos. This was his brainchild back when he was with the Rockets. So, I mean, it could have been just a little bit of stubborn pride on his part, not wanting to undersell his baby. So maybe now we get someone new in there who's willing to look at this from a purely financial, purely I guess, almost statistical business perspective, we might be able to get a deal done sooner, which would allow us to do a lot more things. You know, we might actually be able to go out and grab that free agent or two and might be willing to spend more in certain areas that we haven't in the past.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is essentially, yes, the Yankees have the YES Network and the Red Sox have Masson and a lot of, you know, everybody has their own. I think it's really vital, a vital key, that internet, that TV income deal is vital to a team's success. I think that's the main big thing about it. And if you need a competitive team in order to have that, and obviously the Astros don't have that.
Okay, I'm about to get really off topic here. The Astros, they just canceled the Houston Area Wives Center Foundation, I think, or fund to this foundation for, and they're going to send that money to the underprivileged kids in Houston and stuff like that, and help clean up the streets of Houston. But I just read a tweet that upset me a lot, so I'm going to vent real quick. Somebody said that the Astro or that Jim Crane is going to try to move the team.
What?
Yeah, I don't know how they got that. I guess they think that I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. But I don't ever see that happening, mainly because Jim Crane himself is from Houston.
Okay. Let's not shy away from this. I want to take this is a little mini rant. I don't. Why is everybody so anti Jim Crane? I don't see what the point of this. I don't see the purpose of it. I really don't understand why people are so anti Jim Crane about it. Yeah, he moved the team into, or it wasn't his choice that to move the team into the American League. And if you say he's greedy because he took the however much amount of money he took to move the team to the American League, let's be honest. If you're in his situation and you could save millions of dollars in order to move your team into a better spot, I think you would completely understand. And I think these people are just being overly negative for no reason about it, for no reason whatsoever. They're just being overly negative and anti Jim Crane.
Well, I mean, let's think about it like this. He's wanted a team for a long time. He tried to buy, he tried to buy the Rangers when they came up for sale. Apparently, he was in a group that tried to buy the Cubs a while back. Mm-hmm. He's wanted to be in baseball for quite some time. So when the Astros became available, he had already at one point tried to work a deal with Drayton. Some things that went wrong with that deal, whatever. That deal was over. He got the opportunity, and Bud Selig found leverage on him. There was some leverage about some business dealings. Again, not going to go into that, but he said, you know what, the only way I'm going to let you buy this team is if you move into the American League. So Crane turns that into, okay, he gives him an ultimatum. Crane says, okay, I'll take that, but you're giving me a discount on the team. I'm sorry, that's just smart business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can say what you want to about Crane, but that's the guy's a businessman. Obviously, he's made his own fortune. He's going to do things from a business perspective. He's not sentimental. I mean, he might be a little sentimental because he, you know, obviously was a baseball player, but he's going to do things that make business sense.
Exactly.
So if that's what fans are upset about, then – you know, hey, and he's not going to move I doubt he'll move the Astros from Houston, because honestly, let's look at the size of that city and the sheer amount of a fan base he can create if it's a winning team. I mean, this is one of the biggest sports markets in the country.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. And just the fact that he is from Houston, and I'm pretty sure he is, isn't he?
Yes.
He's from Houston, and he's tried to buy the Astros once before. I think that pretty much, you know, sets the fact that, and I'm sure he grew up as an Astros fan being from Houston. I doubt he wants to move his hometown team anywhere. And no matter what it comes down to, I doubt he's ever going to try to move them. But if they're really upset about him getting that discount, they just don't know business, really. And I'm not one to say that I know business, because I don't, but I know if I was handed it, $80 million discount on something that cost millions and millions of dollars to buy, oh yeah, I'd take the $80 million discount. But I'm, like Jared said, I'm pretty sure he was like, well, if I'm going to have to move the team, you're going to have to give me a discount. But from what I've read, again, if the Diamondbacks had gone up for sale, they would have moved them and then moved Houston to the NL West, or just any other team, really. If they were up for sale, they probably would have moved them and then moved Houston to that other division.
Yeah, I think it was just an unfortunate I guess you could say, luck of the draw and how just things go. And I know a lot of people were bitter from the from the people can give me what, the $10,000 or $10 million check that he made in the Wall Street Journal, that comment he made. And really, it's true. This, it's as public as this business is, this is all private, all the decisions. We have no say in the decisions. All it is Jim Crane, Jeff Luno, and whoever they have to fill the CEO and president spot. It's all there. It's ultimately, it comes down to Crane. He's the guy who signs the checks, and he's the guy who makes the decisions. So this is all his doing. And he's, as Jared said, to somewhat paraphrase him, to paraphrase Crane from the Wall Street Journal, this is a business, and he's a businessman. And he didn't get to where he is now by making dumb business decisions. So he knows what he's doing, and he's going to do what he's going to continue to do what he was doing that got him here in the first place. So I think we just need to all trust Jim Crane into what he's doing.
And one thing, again, about the Houston Area Wives Center, apparently it was the Astros' wives that have cut it off, but nobody's looking at that. They're all putting the blame on Jim Crane, saying it's his fault. But it's a wives thing, and apparently, I can't remember who said it, but she said the wives were the one that cut the deal off or something like that.
So there you go. I think this is really, people are just too quick to blame Jim Crane. Everybody wants to be anti Jim Crane, and everybody wants to, you know, just be negative about this. I don't think it's fair.
I'm all for Jim Crane.
Absolutely. I still love Jim Crane. I met him here in Corpus last year, shook his hand, and gave him a vote of confidence, and just told him, you know, I support what he's doing, and, you know, he'll always have my support, and he thanked me for it.
Well, I mean, I'm a big prospect, big draft guy, and the one thing I liked about Crane is, you know, it was funny because everybody got really upset when they didn't come out and sign any major free agents. And, of course, I had my eye on some guys, some low-budget guys that I think could have been interesting that he didn't go get. But, you know, the thing is everybody's like, well, he's not going to spend money. He refuses to spend money. Wait a second. He gave Lunehell as much money as he needed in the draft. He gave him all of our allotted cap and went over the cap. They didn't hit the tax fund because obviously you don't want to get to where you're losing a pick. But, I mean, he gave him all the money to facilitate the draft. He gave him money to facilitate trades because, let's be honest, Wandy Rodriguez wasn't going to be a part of our future. We needed to be able to deal him to be able to bring some youth back in. Everybody loves Robbie Grossman now. Well, guess where he came from? He did the same thing to free up to trade Brett Myers. Granted, we didn't really get anything back for that, but that all happened because Crane was financially handing Luno money and saying, I trust you, do what you need to. I mean, we took on Francisco Cordero's contract to facilitate a trade.
We also took on a big chunk of Carlos Lee's remaining contract just to get him off the team. Of course, we got Matt Dominguez for that, which, God, I love Matt Dominguez.
That works out as well. And I think it's acceptable losses. I think Jim Crane, these guys know what they're doing. And as you said, he's got trust in Jeff Luno. I think that's the important part, that the trust factor in between those two guys.
Well, and I mean, again, everybody needs someone to blame this season on right now. Mm-hmm. You can blame it on Drayton for, you know, not being willing to give Bobby Heck money during the draft. I think Bobby Heck did as well as he could with what he had. He wasn't given much. Obviously, we skimped on drafts for a long time. We skimped on international prospects. I mean, apparently, you know, we had one of the best international scouts in the game who's now, of course, with the Braves. And obviously, they're really good at it. So, I mean, now it's about reestablishing all of that, and that just doesn't happen overnight.
Sure doesn't. And one thing I like to look back on, you know, whenever people bring up the old drafts, well, I don't like to look back on it because it hurts, but that's the 2007 draft. That draft was just, oh. The 2007 draft was nasty for the Astros. Just not good at all. Didn't sign our top two draft picks, and those came in the third and fourth rounds. It was just, it was bad.
Well, and it's funny because you mentioned the 2000 draft. That's the, if I remember right, that's the absolute phenom draft. That's where everybody, you know, that was one of the best drafts to have a lot of picks in, and of course we didn't have, I think it was the first two rounds, we didn't have a pick in the first two rounds.
It was tough. It was a real tough draft for the Astros that year.
Yeah.
Actually, I went back and I looked up that entire draft for the Astros, and the only one I could look at and know was Dietrich, and he's starting second baseman for the Marlins this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was really just negligence. I looked this up somewhere that we had – I can't remember from what year it was, but I know it was up to 2012. From 2012 to maybe 2003, somewhere in there, that all of our draft picks had a negative impact on the team, and we would have been better off. It was like a negative 1.5 something. And that it was almost as if we would have been better off not drafting anybody from those years.
Well, that's, you know, it's funny that we brought up the 2007 draft. You know, obviously we missed out on Dietrich and actually Chad Bettis, who's with the Rockies system. The first pick we signed in that draft was Colin DeLome. It's actually, I went to high school with Colin and played baseball with him all throughout high school. And that was, you know, it's kind of a funny draft for me because it's like, wow, you know, that's our impact player.
Yeah, and I believe Matt Dominguez was taken in the 2007 draft. As man, a lot of people, that 2007 draft was one of the best drafts in, you know, a while.
It was a really pretty big time draft, but the Astros just really, they didn't get much, if anything, out of the 2007 draft.
Well, I mean, that's why we can, you know, looking at the farm system that we have now and looking at the prospect, looking at all the trades that we've had to do. These trades have been 100% necessary to facilitate a rebuild because we didn't have anything coming up. I mean, we went from the 27th ranked farm system all the way, I think now we're 9, you know, depending on whose rankings you look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got Asher Wojciechowski. I'm just going to call him Wojo because nobody can pronounce that name.
This is the first time I've heard the second pronunciation of it. I've heard Wojciechowski. Lee said it the other night and it was bothering me all night long. He said Wojciechowski. I think it's Wojciechowski, not Chowski. I believe that C is silent, but, you know, I was wrong on Nate Freeman.
Yeah, you were real wrong on Nate Freeman.
Yeah, so I'm not too sure, but everybody here calls him Wojciechowski. I'm not too sure about Chowski, but, you know, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead and go on what you had to say, bud.
Like I said, I call him Wojo because I have no clue how to pronounce that jumble. But, I mean, looking at some of the guys we brought back in that trade, Wojo is a guy who, I mean, if we're willing to push him fast, and he could easily be a guy who we see at the end of the year, you know, September call-ups to let him throw some innings because this guy's blowing through. The big thing when we bought low on Wojo because, I mean, they were saying his fastball's velocity was down. A lot of guys suffer from that when they come out of the college ranks. They said his slider kind of turned more into a cutter, which was, you know, now his big out pitch is gone. Two of his best out pitches are now gone. So it was like, well, of course, the Blue Jays had a ton to facilitate the trade, so they were willing to do it. Well, you know, now all of a sudden, after 1 year, his slider is—they said it's back, and he's back in the mid 90s. You know, his velocity's come back. So these are the kinds of things that we've been able to do because Crane gave us that extra money because Lunho has been creative with these trades. So I mean, constantly knocking Crane—it's because people, you know. I think people are pretty sure that, you know, Craig Biggio and Jim Deshey are going to ride down on a unicorn and slay Jim Crane in Mortal Kombat and, you know, rebuild the team in 1 year. That's not how it's going to work. It's going to take a collective effort and a concentrated effort that has a set plan that we continue to follow. If we don't follow any kind of mapping, we're going to just end up like the Pirates.
Yeah, who just can't get over the 500 mark. Whether they got good prospects or not, which they do. I mean, they have a really good farm team, but they just seems like every year they'll start strong and then they'll just die and they just can't get over 500. But what I'm looking at the Astros and what they're doing, it's looking a lot like the Tampa Bay Rays and the Washington Nationals as well. And we both know, or we all three know, how good of teams those are right there. And those are the plans that you want to follow. And that's basically what the Astros are doing. They're getting number one draft picks. They're stocking up on those, and they're building through trades, and they're just going to build the farm system up until where those guys can contribute at the major league level.
Well, and you've seen the shift now, and especially with the Lowry trade, where we shifted more towards going after major league ready players who can contribute now. You know, when we traded Lowry, everybody was saying that was the deal. We needed to go after a legit superstar level prospect to get a superstar level prospect. You know, a Jerkson Profar type. I just throw that name out there because, you know, that's a notable name. But to get a guy of that top 50 caliber, we would have had to have taken someone in low A or high A. Well, that's not the plan right now. So we took a guy like Brad Peacock, who's again on a rebuild. We took Chris Carter, who obviously has that legit power, and we took Stassi, or, you know, Stacy, however you want to pronounce it, and he's a guy who's also a rebuild. So it's a different kind of mentality, but now there is a look towards winning. We are looking towards the future because, you know, we're going after those major league ready players.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And you brought up Carter and his legit power. He really does have some legit power, and he is a crazy strong dude. I haven't had the chance to see him take BP yet this season, but I've seen him launch some BP type baseballs, and that dude can mash.
Yeah, and going back to Wojciechowski, I believe he's at AAA right now, and watching him pitch in Corpus Christi, he was one of my favorite pitchers to watch here. I just loved going out to watch Wojciechowski pitch. And I think, as Jared mentioned earlier, but I think we will see I'm looking forward to see Jared Kozart come up first rather than Wojciechowski. You know, maybe Wojciechowski gets, you know, a late call up, but I think this would be this is the year for Kozart to make his debut, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Kozart.
Well, obviously, you know, Kozart's the next guy. You know, that's the guy you want to see. But I mean, I didn't mention him because I think he's kind of the obvious choice. The reason I mentioned Woj was because, you know, this is a guy who started off in Double A. This is a guy who we dealt with when another team was kind of done with him. They're like, yeah, well, they had sold low on him. And now all of a sudden, you know, this guy started off in Double A as a rebuild project, not even in our top 10, according to most lists. And now all of a sudden, this is the guy who he could knock on the door easily by the end of the year. I mean, Kozart, obviously, his body is halfway through, and they're just holding him back. You know, it's all super two for him.
Yeah, you know, as to further elaborate on to Asher, to start off 2012, he was in Toronto's high A affiliate of Dunedin. And he came into Corpus Christi, and it looked as almost as if he got into Corpus. He hit the ground running. It was as if, you know, I had not heard anything about him previously, you know, before he came to Corpus. And when I first watched him pitch, it seemed as if we had gotten a steal, and, you know, he would be one of the main components of that trade. And, you know, now that you further tell me the backstory about that, it seems that we kind of got a steal in this one.
Well, and I mean, that's the kind of stuff that Luno is trying to do. Is he's trying to go out there and find these diamonds in the rough, because obviously, if you look at the guys we've traded, you know, people get upset because we haven't went out and got that superstar. We didn't, you know, obviously we didn't trade for Will Myers. Well, we don't necessarily have the trade pieces to get a guy like Will Myers. Now, right now, of course, we're looking at Bud Norris and Lucas Harrell as the possible trade chips, and there's even discussion of an Altuve trade. Norris and Harrell have a lot of value because there's such a lack of starting pitching available.
Right.
It's not because they're superstar level pitchers. They're both number threes at best.
Right. And I totally agree. I think the Altuve trade talk is a little outrageous, but it's not far-fetched. And I believe the starting pitchers would be more of a more believable, as you would say, trade bait.
Well, me and Lee actually had a discussion last night over Twitter about a potential Altuve trade. If the thing is, you have to look at Altuve. How many just deal-breaking trades have you seen for leadoff type hitters? And I mean, because that's what Altuve is for most teams. He's a leadoff hitter. And especially being at second base, that's not a premium position. He's not playing shortstop. He's not behind the plate. He's not in center field. So someone's going to have to really go out and say, hey, here is 4 to 5 prospects in a Hunter Pence type deal. Are we going to get that? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, see, and that's where the Dylan Bundy thing falls in. If Baltimore really wants Jose Altuve, they're probably going to have to give up Dylan Bundy. And he is in the Orioles system, right? Before I screw this all up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. They're going to have to say, okay, well, you're going to have to give up Dylan Bundy and then a lot more to get him, and they probably just won't. You know, it's not a common thing. And you can say, well, Curtis Granderson, that was a big deal. Yeah, and you could also look at Chu, but Chu was involved in a three-way trade in which everything just went everywhere to everybody. You know, people sent stuff to Cleveland, they sent stuff to Arizona, they sent stuff back to Cincinnati. It was just a big three-way trade. So the possibility of Altuve getting traded now, I think, is not that big. Of course, it's not a far-fetched idea, but I just don't see it happening anytime soon. Now, Harrell and Norris, Jared, we had that same discussion with Harrell, and you brought up the point, well, he's not really built, he's not efficient enough to stay in the rotation here or the bullpen. And once you brought that up, I tend to agree with you on that. He's really not near efficient enough to stay with this the lineup and all that. But the only problem that I see the Astros dealing with when trading him is that he's just so cheap right now. And, you know, he's under team control for a few more years. And what – I mean, the projected rotation, you know, you got Wojo and you got Cozart in there somewhere next year. But after that, I'd bet Lucas Harrell still here. Now, Norris, he probably won't be. But I just don't know if I could see Harrell getting traded yet. Not that I don't want him to or anything like that. It's just he's just so cheap and under team control. I don't know if they move him.
Well, when you look at a deal for Harrell, it all comes down to what people are willing to offer. The consensus, the thought process from most guys, of course, most bloggers, most speculators, seems to be that teams prefer Harrell to Cozart, mm-hmm. or not to Cozart, to Norris. Harrell's obviously a ground ball pitcher that can pitch in that'll pitch in most parks. Norris isn't going to pitch in as many parks just because in the past he's been more of a fly ball pitcher. He doesn't exactly have the body to project as anything more than 160, 170, maybe 180 innings. He's not going to be that 200 inning guy, and his strikeout numbers are down. So the value. Again, the reason I think Harrell will go is because I think teams, once these negotiations start, we're going to say, hey, you know, what do you think about Norris? And they're going to say, well, what would it take to get Harrell? And when we lay the prices out for both guys, they may say, well, if we're going to pay this price for Norris, you know what, we might as well throw in either this extra piece or, you know, upgrade this to get Harrell. Might as well. Now, I'm not saying it happens, not saying both get traded, but I think just considering the way the season's going, it could happen, especially since Cozart and Wojo knocking on the door. Peacock could be recalled. You know, Lyles is probably here to stay, whether he throws well or not.
Yeah, and the thing about Lyles is, like you said, you know, he gets out there and he just tries to pump strikes, and he doesn't locate once he gets in a jam. And his first two starts, he still did it, but it was nothing like his last start. His last start against the Rangers was – that was tough to watch. I couldn't watch – it was tough to watch. I watched it, of course, but it was just really hard to watch him struggle like that, because I'm a really big Lyles fanboy. So it was just tough to watch. It was really tough to watch. Now, his first two starts, I was happy with those. He got a win out of one. He should have had a win in the other, but Rick Ankiel, shaking my head.
Yeah, that a little bit of blame could be placed there. So, guys, this podcast has gone a little bit long. little bit longer than we expected. So we're going to try and wrap this thing up. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
This year's upcoming draft, if we can fit that in.
Yeah, we could squeeze that in.
Well, this is definitely an interesting draft for the Astros. Of course, we've got 1-1 second year in a row, and second year in a row, we're coming into what is considered a weak draft. This year's draft is actually considered to be weaker than last year's, which I think is kind of funny. But last year, obviously, we took the 6'4 shortstop Carlos Correa, and this year it looks like we may actually get Mark Appel after skipping on him last year. I think that's really interesting considering how, and I was a Byron Buxton guy last year. I was actually against Appel just because I didn't see the dominance. Well, this year he's stepped up and he's really established himself. So this could be an interesting draft for the Astros.
Oh, man, you know, I was kind of with Buxton, but I also thought Correa, because, you know, Correa started making some noise towards the end of last, right before the draft, kind of. And so I was looking up on the top prospects for the Astros that they could take, and I was reading in on Correa, and I was like, you know, I really like this guy. But then I was like, there's Buxton, too. Buxton, I kind of like him, you know. And then at first I was really all on Appel. I was like, we need to take Appel. And then, you know, I started thinking more about it, and I was like, you know what? Maybe they're wrong and these guys are right. I think we should go after Buxton or Correa, you know. And I was just reading up on them, and I started to fall into the Buxton crew. But once we got Correa, you know, I was pretty ecstatic with that, and especially now that we have a chance to get Appel. Like you said, he's established himself this year. He's stepped up, and he's a beast, man. He really is. And I really, really hope the Astros get Appel this season. I really do.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to three guys. The three main pieces we can take is Appel, obviously, more overall pro package. Jonathan Gray with the fastball that can touch up to 100 miles an hour, 6'5", power arm. And then Chris Bryant, who's the 6'5", third baseman out of San Diego. Just crazy powers, hit 28 home runs this year. Probably profiles more as a right fielder in the majors. You know, could... And this draft is really weak on bats, so it's feasible that we could jump and take him at 1-1 because he's the best bat available. There's the two high school guys that are kind of the dark horses, but, you know, this could be interesting for the Astros. You know, everybody speculates we're going to end up taking Craig's son, Kevin. And, again, that's another bat-first choice. This is a guy who doesn't really have a defensive position. He could be the guy at 2-1 because his bat, I mean, no one knows where he's going to play when it comes down to it, but if he hits enough, I don't think anyone's really going to care.
Yeah, see, I pretty much had an idea of who I think the Astros could take, and like you said, it comes down to those big three. But I was going to more ask you about 2-1 and who you really think the Astros could take at 2-1, because I think that's an interesting position for the Astros. And I'm not the best on following college baseball, so I was over high school for that matter. But I was really, really wanting to know, you know, who your top guys are for 2-1, what you think could really go down right in that position.
Well, here's the thing to consider about 2-1. 2-1 for us this year is pick 40. Last year we got Lance McCullers Jr. at pick 41. They've actually raised the amount that the picks are worth this year, so pick 40 this year is worth roughly 1.4 million. So, I mean, looking at it from me, kind of what I'm thinking, obviously, Kevin Biggio is an option. He's not my favorite option. He's a bat only kind of guy. There's a lot of college arms that tend to be ranked in that area, but the guys that everybody thinks, you're obviously looking for that guy who slides down the draft. Cole Stewart's the name that comes up enough, or a lot, and he could slide due to he is a dual sport commitment to Texas A&M, and obviously with Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel possibly going into the draft in the next year or so, Cole Stewart might be able to step in as quarterback there. He's considered one of the best quarterbacks in the country in the high school ranks. He's also a type 1 diabetic, which could lead teams to kind of stumble at drafting him just due to health concerns. So that's a guy, if he slid to pick 40, I mean, this is a guy who's easily a top 10. Same, he's a Lance McCullers Jr., 6'3", big fastball, big slider. he could, if he slid, that's obviously who you want. But the guy I really like is Ryan Bolt. Ryan Bolt is a he's a leadoff type center fielder out of Minnesota. He recently had arthroscopic surgery on his knee, so he's not going to be able to play until after the draft. He was considered to be a top 20 pick, and if he slid to 40, I would say even with arthroscopic surgery, which is mainly just a cleanup surgery, we could, I would say, take him. He's a leadoff type center fielder, athletic, kind of plays with that almost that Brett Phillips type athletic profile. But, you know, that's the guy for me. There's also Alex Belog out of San Francisco, a big arm. There's some guys, but it's, you're mainly hoping for that one player to slide down the draft.
Yeah, and Ryan Bolt is the name that I've seen come up when talking about 2-1, but I wasn't sure if he was going to slide or not. But like you said, he's not going to be able to play until after the draft, so there is that chance. And that's a dude that I've seen come up on my timeline quite a few when talking about the draft. So it's going to be interesting this year to see what happens, to say the least. I personally really hope the Astros draft a Pell, but I don't think they can go wrong at 1-1. I don't think they really do. So it's going to be a fun draft, and I'm really looking forward to it. I know last year I watched the draft very closely and plan on doing the same this season.
Well, all right, guys, that was certainly insightful. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to us having Jared Webb. Jared, if there's ever a time you want to come back on the show, man, we'd be more than happy to have you on.
Next time I'll try not to be so long-winded so we can keep it brief and to the point.
Oh, man, no worries. No worries about being long-winded. Lee, anything else? Any last closing statements?
Nothing from me. I'm pretty well set. So.
Alrighty, Jared, is there anything you want to plug at the end here?
You know, just at this point, I'm going to tell you guys what I try to tell everybody. Just stick to the plan. You know, there is a plan in place. Just don't give up. It's going to get better. It's going to get worse a little bit, but it'll get better eventually.
Well, all right, guys. Well, Jared, appreciate having you on. As always, anytime, you're more than welcome back here. Lee, thank you for being on, guys. And as always, follow us on Twitter at YokoRick, at Lee_White73. For Jared, you can find him at Webaroo11. And as always, check the site, StrosBros.com. If you aren't, StrosBros.MLBlogs.com. If you aren't already subscribed to iTunes, find us there on iTunes and subscribe there. You can see Jared's work on farmstros.blogspot.com. And as always, thank you guys for listening. Leave a comment on what you want to hear next, or get us at Twitter, at the Stros Bros. So that just about closes it out for us. Jared, thank you for coming on. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
Later. I'm waking up.